Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast 2022 episode 7. I'm Dan Tomlinson. I'm joined as always by Rich Harrison, aka Pommy Rich. How are you doing, mate?
I'm very well, mate. And
you? Yeah, good, thank you. Pretty buzzing still after what we saw on Saturday afternoon. That was exactly what we want to see in Brett Hodgson's Hull FC. And all those parts came together. It was more the manner of the victory. You know, we all went there expecting a tough game and we absolutely blew them away and played some outstanding stuff. It was eye-catching, attractive, you know, really easy on the eye. Just a brilliant performance.
Yeah, and first time you've seen us on a dry track as well. I think that shows what we can do when it's dry and the ball's not slimy and greasy and, you know, we it's not a battle of forward attrition. We're actually got a little bit of width and a bit of, you know, got more speed now. That's much more like it. Much more like it.
Yeah. Do you know, that's something I didn't actually mention. I mentioned it in the preview, but not in any of the stuff I did after. The fact that it was a nice day, you know, the sun was out, the sun was on us in the East Stand, which was nice. It was nice not to be freezing our ass off at a rugby league match. And to actually see the players actually go out and enjoy themselves on that dry track. And like you just said, the width Hull played with was outstanding. They looked to stretch Salford at every given opportunity. The shape was good, the structure was good. And as you say, the speed in Hull right now on the flanks and the ability they've got in those edge players to, you know, to get round the opposition now is really exciting. And as I say, that was so easy on the eye. It was so good to watch. And it's one game. We know that. We know it's going to be very hard not to get carried away. But we all know the score with Hull FC, don't we? We've accepted where we're at. We know where our strengths are. We know where our weaknesses are. But right now we can focus on the strengths because that was such a good display. It really was. And obviously there were a few individuals that really stood out. But And this is very cliche, but it was one of those 1-17 performances where you can see, you know, there was literally not a bad performance on that team. Everyone played a part, literally everyone across the field. And that was good to see as well, because there's a lot of young kids there that have obviously come in and took some stick who played well. Obviously, you've got your Jake Connors who have come straight back into that side. And honestly, mate, he was absolutely phenomenal. That was incredible watching Jake on Saturday. There's not enough superlatives to do that performance justice. He was absolutely magnificent. And Salford couldn't lay a hand on him.
Well, I mean, who else? I mean, if that was any other player with six assists and a try, they'd be lauding him as, you know, the next Ellery Hanley or the next whatever, you know, the next Billy Slater as fullback or whatever. But because it's Connor and because it's Hull, it's just like, oh, well, you know, he's slow. He's not the finished article. His head's wrong or whatever else, you know. At the end of the day, that is a spectacular performance. On stats alone, never mind the mental stuff that he does, which is getting under opposition players' skin, which I think we'll touch on the fact that him and Snead seem to have a bit of bad blood and had a bit of a ding dong battle. You can't put that stuff into that's not a statistic, is it? That's the way he plays the game. It's the way that he comports himself, and I think sometimes we, as a sport, get really bogged down in numbers and tackles and meters made and offloads and assists and tries and all the rest of it. But what he brings to that team is something really special. And between him and Reynolds, because I think we will touch on Reynolds just being all over the pitch and putting himself about in defence and putting himself about in attack, when those two are fit and on form, we'll take some stopping. And that's without our, you know, international scrum half.
Well, that's the point itself, because Carlos Tuomavaavi won't play, obviously Scott Taylor, you know, Joe Cater, Jacob Rukan won't play. There was eight out in total, and obviously you're extending that, you're pushing that, saying, you know, people like Hookham, but there was a four or five players there.
Manu would be in that team.
Yeah, exactly. There's four or five there that
probably
are on big money, you know, like you say, that would have played and are on big money. So I think it's all the more complimentary to FC, the fact that, and this is something we both mentioned after St. Helens, Hull FC's depth is good enough to cope with, you know, someone around that mid to lower table spot. I don't want to be disrespectful to Salford here, but when you come up against St. Helens, it's a different kettle of fish, isn't it? They are absolutely magnificent, and you need your best parts to beat St. Helens. You ain't going to beat St. Helens with seven or eight outs, as simple as that. But with Salford or a Wakefield, or dare I say with a cast next week, and Leeds and Huddersfield in the couple of weeks to come, you'd like to think that Hull can give them a crack, even if they have got a few out, and that shows that the depth is there. and it shows that we have got some quality. And when you're talking about Jake Connor, I mean, what winds up about it is, even opposition fans were saying, "Oh, it's only Salford. Oh, why don't he do this against big teams?" So have you not watched him? He ripped everyone apart in Super League last year in a mediocre Hull team. He was absolutely phenomenal. He was really top five in the Man of Steel, for God's sake. He is an absolutely outstanding rugby league player. And he's what you pay to watch. You watch Jake Connor, you know you're in for something special. And that was the thing, because every time he touched the ball on Saturday, there was an awe in the crowd. The crowd stood up and they were thinking, "Oh, God, what's going to happen now?" There was excitement, there was anticipation, because he just knew something was going to happen. And he was coming into the line, out the back, he was throwing the pass short, he was throwing it long, he was delaying it, he was quick firing it out, he was kicking the ball. They just couldn't get anywhere near him. And the skill set on show from Connor was absolutely outstanding. It really was. I don't think I've seen an individual performance like that in a very long time, where you can think someone's come off the pitch like that and you're thinking, Jesus, that was phenomenal. Because, like I said, there's no superlatives that can do that justice. And I'm struggling to... You're probably thinking to the cup wins, you know, with Sneed, when he was single-handedly stood out. You're thinking, you know, St Helens in the first game when we nearly put 50 on him, and he was outstanding that day. And I'm really struggling to name performances that were that good, because, honestly, it was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the danger in that is that the word will go around Super League, if you stop Connor, you stop Hull. You know, that's the issue.
I think everyone knows that already, don't they? Because that's a fact.
Well, exactly, and I'm sure that's what Salford went into the game with their game plan. Let's stop Connor. But you know, when he's ghosting around, the thing that I like about the way that we're playing him at the moment is that we're playing him almost the same way that Manly play Tom Trbojevic, where he kind of operates behind the ruck and pops up and chimes in when he needs to. You know, and when he gets the ball, he's getting quality ball. He's not, you know, he's not getting caught in the tackle and getting ragdolled to the floor, and you know, like a halfback sometimes does, because he's playing out the back and he's playing at fullback. He just, you know, he's got that gift that the best players in the world have got, which is the gift of time. And he makes himself time by being mentally two steps ahead of everyone else on the pitch. He's not the quickest fullback in the world. He's not the quickest player in our team by a mile. But his speed of thought is what gives him the space. And it was the same as Sterling had it. Sterling wasn't the quickest, most pacey player that we've ever had. But the speed he had between his ears was what made him a great player. And that's the same with Connor, is that he sees the rugby league pitch in front of him like a chessboard. And he's moving players around in defence, and he's moving players around in attack. It's very, very good to see. And, you know, maybe without Gale calling the shots in front of him, maybe he had a bit more of a free rein with the team, and that's kind of what worked against Salford.
It's interesting. On that front, you can give a bit of credit to Ben McNamara as well, who did his job very well. Just, you know, he let the ball go from first receiver, linking with Reynolds and then linking with Connor. And I think there was definitely, you know, a connection between the halfbacks and the fullback there. And it does open, you get a lot more favourable ball than Hull have had the previous two games. And obviously that goes with the opposition in St Helens' case. And it also goes with the, you know, the wet weather conditions that we had in both games. It's not really a day for open entertaining rugby, is it? But I think that made a huge difference, the fact that Hull actually were allowed to play. They got on top of the opposition, and that's where you can start saying, you know, well done to the pack of forwards as well, who run that ruck and ensured that Houghton got quick ball. And there's another thing, Danny Houghton, you know, he deserves some credit, because he was very good on Saturday. And Shock Horrocks with a lower tackle count. He made, I think it was 29 tackles he made. And
there you go.
And it's like it goes hand in hand, and it really is. It's like, maybe making 50, 60 tackles isn't actually a good thing, because he makes half of that, and he's 10 times better with the ball. His distribution was good. And he obviously, the hooker is the first point of call. And that width, and that, you know, the width that I look to play, we've all started from Houghton, and he was very good. But, yeah, I think, going back to your point about Connor popping up, it was just, they had the freedom to do that and to get around the pitch and pop up wherever he wanted. And he was just roaming about. It was his house, basically. And Sneed, he tried to get under his skin. He tried to wind him up a little bit. First coming together, Robert Hicks actually blew a penalty. It was Jake Connor playing the ball. He sort of pushed out at Sneed, and Hicks gave the penalty to Salford. And then Sneed's obviously laughing and tapping his head, telling Connor to keep his head. And you're thinking, oh, God, here we go. He's going to wind Jake up here. Because you think Sneed's usually the calm person. He's the one with the cool head. Couldn't be more wrong, right? Because the next time it happened, same thing happens again. Connor plays the ball and Sneed strikes at him when he's on the floor as well with what looked like an elbow, which is so unlike Mark Sneed. I mean, come on, he played, what, 160 games, 160-odd games for LFC? And I'm thinking the Danny Maguire incident in his first year. I can't remember another incident when he was playing for Hull where something like that happened. So it's completely out of character for Sneed. But I'll tell you what, I don't wish bans on anyone, but he deserves a ban for that because it didn't look good.
Yeah, and you can only think that he's tried too hard. You know, he's disappointed with the way that I think a lot of Hull supporters have kind of moved on quite quickly, despite the fact that he was, you know, as me and you have said, you know, he's a hero of the club and everything. But I think, you know, out of necessity, we've moved on, and maybe he's got his nose out of joint a little bit with the way that we have. It's possible. And then, you know, when you've got someone like Connor in your face, he's lost his cool by the sounds of it. And, you know, Connor's done him up like a kipper and put him in his pocket. And you know, we ended up absolutely trouncing him on the day. Yeah. So, you know, the winner out of that is Jake Connor by an absolute country mile, isn't it?
Absolutely.
See, that's the thing. From the tries I've seen, because I've only seen the tries, and I'm really gutted about that because apparently Reynolds' tackle right at the death was an absolute stunner, wasn't it?
I got pumped up watching that just as much, if not a little bit more, than I did watching Hull's attack being so good. The game had completely gone. Obviously, it's 48-16. And Salford tried to play some rugby. They've got absolutely nothing to lose. They've been smashed, blah, blah, blah. They throw the ball out. Sneed was actually involved in that. A great cut-out pass. They get the ball to the edge, and Joe Baird, you should think he's got space in front of him. He had a good 15 metres of grass in front of him. Ah, he's going to score here. And then out pops Josh Reynolds and smashes him into touch. And he was absolutely buzzing. It was right in that southeast corner, so obviously where all Hull's vocalist fans are. And they fed off that, and the place was bouncing then. And you could see Reynolds G'ing up the crowd and, you know, fist pumping and screaming. He was absolutely buzzing. And you know what? He cares. And you said this. When we first signed Josh Reynolds, you said we'll get a very emotional player who absolutely cares about the club, who will buy into everything. I'll tell you what, he gets his critics, but he cares. He does care. We see that emotion. We see that every single week, that enthusiasm, that energy. And it's just funny with Reynolds. Yeah, you actually get a dry track, he gets some favourable balls, some good field position, and he comes into his own. Again, it's like the Houghton thing. We whinge about the tackle thing and not seeing enough in attack. It's the same with Reynolds. You give a half-back good ball, then you say, right, okay, you've got no excuses now. Show us what you can do. And Josh Reynolds did that. When he got criticism against St Helens last week, I'm thinking, that's a bit stupid, isn't it? Gale's been sent off. Our structure, our shape's gone completely out the window because we're now disgruntled, we're dismantled, we're disorganised, and everyone takes the opportunity after a defeat by an absolutely outstanding side to have a pop at Josh Reynolds. Usually it's Cam Scott, isn't it, who gets the stick when we get beat. I just thought it was lazy. It was really lazy to have a go at Reynolds last week. I'll tell you what, he should have few people.
What's he going to do?
Exactly.
What's he going to do? And he never stopped trying. He never stopped trying. At the end of the day, mate, right, let's look at it objectively, right? Forget the Saints score line, right? Just focus on the result. At the start of the season, if you'd have said to me, by game three, you'll be played 2-1-1, and the only team you'll have lost to would be St Helens, who won the entire bloody thing last year and are the best team in the league by a mile, you'd take that.
You'd bite your hand off.
You'd absolutely take that. A really difficult game away first up at Wakefield in terrible conditions. We grounded out and we won. A really tricky game at home to a Salford team who hadn't been beaten this year, let's not forget, with our former talismanic seven in charge on a mission to prove the team wrong. Bloody banana skin and a half, that one, and we've won it. And then the only thing that's really tripped us up against St Helens is, A, we came up against a bloody amazing team on a day where there was a lot of emotions after poor Johnny Whiteley died, and then we had a player sent off. And in the bloody snow. Everything that could have gone wrong for us on that day went wrong for us. Everything. No luck, no cut, you know, down to 12 men, just back up to 13, down to 12 men again. Our halfback gets a long-term ban. You know, every 50-50 call went against us, apart from the try, which was offside. I would have snapped your hand off at the start of the season if you'd have said to me you'd be 2-from-3. Going into Cass, who have lost every single match on a roll, thinking we can beat Cass and we can beat Leeds the week after that. Do you know? I absolutely take that.
100%.
And that St Helens performance wasn't great. But you can't blame the players that played because not one of them gave up.
Absolutely. We showed that fight against St Helens. And that's all you can ask for sometimes. And if you come up against a better opposition and you get beat, you have to accept that because you're not going to win every game. It does frustrate me when we go on individual pops and it's a bit rich coming from us after what we did, you know, in the back end of last year with some players. But those were senior, underperforming players.
I think the difference of what we did was we looked at it objectively and we said, this is what a player brings and this is what someone else in that position would bring. Having a pop is seeing our starting 17 when the club put a Facebook post out and then 100 things underneath going, game over, we'll lose this. What's Lloyd Dewar doing in the second row? Bloody Cam Scott, what's he doing in there? How come Conor Wynn's not playing? This is a disgrace. We're going to lose. Cam Scott this, Cam Scott that. And boy, did he show them.
He did.
That 40 minutes was almost complete 40 minutes by Hull FC Centre in a long, long time. A long time. And he's shown him, mate. He's a young kid and he's got the skills. He's a bloody good player. The only thing he's missed is he's an extended run in the first team. And now he's getting that. He's showing people what he can do.
Yeah, 100%, mate. And again, I've just said Houghton was better, less tackles equals better attack.
Yep.
Reynolds, good field position equals more influence. Cam Scott getting good, quick ball out wide on the edge equals a better performance. It's like they're all simple equations, aren't they? And he showed what he can do. He got quick ball. He got time and space to do things. That second try was absolutely sensational. You know, talk about entertaining rugby league and the entertainers. That was phenomenal. Yep. It really was. And to see him have the confidence to kick and go beyond, and you know, it's brilliant.
This is a Hodgson thing, mate. He's looked at that and he's gone, never mind squad numbers, never mind reputation, let's pick this team on form. Cam Scott's got to be there on form. Love a doer in second row to take the pressure off Houghton so he's not tackling. Love a doer made more tackles than Houghton, I think, this week, right? So then you look at that and you think, he's not just picking the team to, you know, on form or whatever, he's picking the team that it takes to win the game in hand. He knows what Salford bring. He knows the kind of team that Salford are. He knows the style of play, and he's picked a 17, that will neutralise that. And that's a good coach.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you get these guys that go, oh, you know, Scholl should be in that team. Anybody who says that Jamie Scholl should be Hull FC's fullback, number one fullback, after watching Jake Connor take a team apart from fullback, needs their head read. Because you can say, oh, well, what, you know, what if he was playing at six? No. If he was playing at six, he'd be too close to the defensive line and he wouldn't have that space and that time.
Plus, he'd be on an edge. He'd be on one edge or the other, wouldn't he? He wouldn't have that freedom to roam about.
Where he needs to. Exactly. You can't do that when you play six.
Exactly.
Because you're in the defensive line. He needs to be out the back, playing in a dinner jacket and injecting himself into where and when he can. And anybody, after watching that performance on the weekend, that thinks that Scholl should be our number one fullback, sorry, you're watching a completely different game to me and to you. And you know, it's a shame because Jamie Scholl, legend of the club, try at Wembley, all the rest of it. But that's gone. You know, he's not the same player that he was. And he's still got a place that you can put him in the squad if you can't get rid. And, you know, he did very well coming off the bench and played in the wing and all the rest of it. But he's not our number one fullback. He really isn't.
Could not agree more. I mean, I had the rant about it last week, saying we should be getting rid and we should be listening to interest. Obviously, rumoured to come out, and obviously that's been and gone now because Toulouse have signed Ole Ashall Bolt from Huddersfield. So, but if something comes up, we've got to be looking to maybe get better use of that cap, and it is what it is. But you know, we've been down that road, and we know that we've got to be ruthless, and we've got to put the club first, and we've got to, loyalty and sentiment can only go so far. And yeah, Connor's the number one. It's as simple as that. To even suggest that he should not be the number one, I think earns you a one-way ticket to Cloud Cuckoo Land, to be honest. After watching that, and not just that, but all the way through last season, because everything good about last year, it came from what, two people, didn't it? It came from Connor, or it came from Satai.
Yep.
It was phenomenal.
You look at that team that he picked at the weekend, right? I mean, obviously McNamara at halfback goes off injured, early. Yeah. It was a head assessment, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Johnston comes on and plays seven, which you'd have looked and gone, oh, Jesus, did a job. Did a job for us. Scott goes off injured. They shuffle and they put Sean on the wing. Did a job.
Yeah, McIntosh in
Broughton
centre.
And Brown
yeah.
on the bench wouldn't be your or my first pick for bench props.
No.
If everyone was fit. Both came on and did a job. Loverdew were playing out, well, playing in the second row. I can't say playing out of position because he is a utility forward.
Yeah.
You know? Did a great job. Lane, great job. Fash, never back down. Sal, Houghton and Sata as a front row. Jesus, you can't go much better than that. And like you say, we've changed our style of play a little better so it protects Danny Houghton so that when he's got the ball in his hand, he's not gassed and knackered and looked a completely different player. Josh Reynolds played out of his skin. Well, bloody hell, do you know? Oh, we've got a coach that knows what he's bloody doing.
Again, and that's another thing, mate. Why are people still slagging off Hodgson and saying he should be doing this and that? He knows exactly the best way to get Hull FC going forward right now. And every time I look at Hull and compliment Hull and praise Hull, it's all things that Hodgson has brought to this club, and you can see there's a plan there. You can see what he's trying to do.
Yes.
You can see the direction he's going in and the type of player that he wants and the youth that he's pushing through and the youth that he trusts. It's all coming together, and it's a process. Yeah. It's not going to be overnight, yeah. And there's going to be some hiccups. There's going to be some games this year which we'll lose, and we think, oh, we should have won that. And there'll be some games like St. Helens where yep. we just get completely outclassed. It's how we respond to that and how we keep going and how we come back after a defeat and say, you know what, it's a clean piece of paper, we'll go again and we'll put a performance in like we just did against Salford. That's what it's all about this year. We've got to accept where we are. Again, you can't say that enough. And honestly, Brett Hodgson is literally the best thing about Hull right now. It's just so fresh, and it still feels fresh now, even though we've had a year under him, which finished in obviously far from ideal circumstances, but we all know why that was. We can see that we are definitely moving forward under Hodgson. Again, it's the three S's, isn't it? It's the shape, the structure and the speed, and all three of those have improved under him. Cam Scott was absolutely excellent. He really was. And it comes out, he had a really strong finish to last year, while others around him who are on a lot more money and who are a lot more a lot more experienced, didn't exactly. He was very good. He got one of the player of the month from the club, which was nice. It was a nice touch that because he deserved it. And he's picked up where he left off last year. He's been absolutely brilliant so far. So, and the defensive thing, you think the first 10 minutes it was 0-0. It was 0-0 for a while, and Salford had a bit of ball. Attacking their own fans, so attacking the North Stand, and they shipped the ball out wide, and there was a moment where you're thinking, oh, they're in here. And Hull actually held them up, and Cam Scott was involved in there. It was a big, big, big tackle. So it wasn't just with the ball he was good, he was good without it as well. And our edges look really strong. Josh Griffin comes in, and he's immense. He's been one of the most consistent players at Hull FC for three seasons now. He's a phenomenal player, is Griffin. Nice to see him get the captaincy as well for a day. He'll probably get it for the next four games while Gale's out. But he deserves it because his attitude is absolutely outstanding, and he's a big player for
him
now.
He leads by example.
Exactly, exactly. You never hear of any bad behaviour off the field or anything with Griffin. He's just a model professional. I love the bloke. He's brilliant.
To be honest, he's taken that mantle as the kind of senior, the kind of elder statesman of that squad from Mike Minicella.
Yeah, it's a good call, that. Yeah.
He's the one that you look up to. He's the one that young players want to be under his wing and, want to be learning from, in the same way that our young pack. And, it's no coincidence that someone like Fash has got that work ethic and that professionalism around him after playing with someone like Minicella and with Ellis and people like that, because they're the players that you look up to and you go, right, well, why has he spent so long in the team? Why are these guys both 36, 37 and still pulling on a first grade jersey? It's because they eat right, it's because they train right, it's because they act right, it's because they're not out until 3 o'clock in the morning falling out of a nightclub cooked out of their heads. That's why. That's the kind of thing you got to look up to, and Griffin's very much that, isn't he? He's, you ask Cam Scott what he thinks of Josh Griffin. You ask McIntosh what he thinks of Josh Griffin. He's one for them to look up to.
I think that works both ways as well. I think I'm only judging this by what I see on social media, but Josh Griffin's big for this. He's always big enough. You likes a Cam Scott. Like when he got injured last year is a prime example. That was a horrible time for Griffin personally. And obviously he took a lot of shit on socials for the incident with what happened with Tharge and Moore and all that nonsense. But thinking, All he did was show support for Scott. Like, this is your chance now. Go and take it. Yeah. And to be honest, he did.
Yeah.
He did. In a poor Hull side, Cam Scott took that opportunity and he was good. And right now, with our speed on the edges, Adam Swift was good again. He was busy. He had a couple of moments where he went on the outside as well and made a couple of breaks and looked good for it. He hasn't scored this season yet, but his overall contribution has been absolutely outstanding. Daniel McIntosh, what a bleeding player he is. And I'll tell you what, mate, this is where James Clark deserves some credit. I am absolutely sick of saying, oh, we haven't replaced Matt O'Toole. James Clark has pulled off a blinder there. He got rid of two slouches. All right, they had moments, and don't worry, I did like Brett Freemo, but he's a loose cannon. We've seen it at Cass already. He's got two yellows in three games. Fnua overpaid liability, wasn't really needed, blah, blah, blah. He's replaced it with an out-and-out speedster, that Hodgson, type of player Hodgson wants, a type of player that now fits into this slicker, more flair, more finesseful FC team. He's done it the same with Lovajua. What a fan that is. Someone who can cover nine, someone who can cover back row, loose forward.
Yep.
Obviously signed a leader in Luke Gayle, who was obviously we will see the best of in the summer. And we'll see the first glimpse of Kane Evans this weekend. So you think what we're actually doing and the contracts that we announced last year, obviously 2-year deal for Josh Griffin, 2-year deal for Brad Fash. The year before that, we ensured that we got Jordan Lane signed up, you know, Carlos Tumavavi, people like that. These are big, big players at Hull FC. He's doing all right. And I tell you what, we have gone down that loyal, that sentimental road that has held us back, and we've still got a couple now who are holding us back. But overall, you look at what happened last winter and you think he's actually doing okay. He doesn't deserve all the shit he gets on socials. He works his ass off. He really does. I don't want to...
Do you know what? People need a scapegoat, do you know? And when you've got a new coach and all the rest of it, it's hard to blame the coach after a year. Although I have seen, I saw one idiot say, I think Brett Hodgson's got three games to save his career. They said that before the game on the week. I mean, that's just bloody pathetic. So, I mean, you look at it and I get the I get people wanting us to be, you know, to win more games than we lose, and people wanting us to win the comp and all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, we're dealing now with some mismanagement from a few years ago when you had a head coach that said, I want this player, this player, this player, and our owner said, OK, we'll give you that. And they were the wrong players. Fanua should never have come back, as we've said. When he did come back, Farima and him were the same player, basically, and having two of them in your team was just ridiculous. We didn't have a balanced team. At one stage, we had four first-grade wingers. That's ridiculous. You know, we signed Swift, and then the week after, we signed Fanua. Just ridiculous, stupid cap management. And a lot of that is down to Clark and down to Pearson listening to what Radford wanted and just giving him it because he was the head coach. Now, what Hodgson's done is he's come in and gone, right, this place is a mess. We need to get rid of him. 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 If anyone comes in for him, he can go. And if anyone comes in for him, he can go. And he's basically said to six or seven players, someone comes in and gives us a decent offer, you're gone. You know, the whole thing with Sneed, that was, Salford just went, oh, look, we're probably going to sign him next year. Is there any chance? And we went, yeah, take him. I mean, like, literally, it happened. You listen to what Sneed said. That happened within decent haste. You know, and I think that's half the reason why Sneed's got his nose out of joint, is the ease at which we let him go. Because Hodgson realised we'd be better off without. We can grow more as a team without him than we did with him. Because while he was there, we would always play the same way. And to affect change, you've got to affect change in your halfback. So that's what we've done. For Clark to then go out and find, you know, to go out and find Gayle, and to go out and realise that we needed a fast winger, and when our coach goes, we need quick wingers, and we need this guy and this guy and this guy, to go out and secure McIntosh early, to get Josh Reynolds, to get Kane Evans, to find Lovadua from nowhere, mate, great work. Fantastic work. And you've got to remember, this is evolution. We're not the finished article. We're nowhere near the finished article. And we won't be the finished article ever, because it always evolves and always changes. But I tell you what, we'll get a lot closer by the end of this year when we work out who's not being retained next year. And we start seeing some of the names that are coming in next year. You know, whether Gayle is a one-season halfback for us or whether we give him an extension. whether we do go for Jake Truman, who's going to be playing against us next week from Cass, or whoever we go for, whether we go for an Aussie or whatever happens, by the end of this year, you're going to see more of the finished article that Brett Hodgson wants. Because at the end of the day, he's still working 50% with another man's squad.
But he's getting the best. Because, he's definitely getting the best out of what he's got. That's the thing here.
Absolutely. And mate, what have we always said? This is why Brian Smith was such a hero as a coach for Hull. And this is going way back. You know, this is going 25, 30 years back now. But Brian Smith was such a good coach for Hull because he got the absolute best out of average players. Since then, we've had coaches that have had teams with bags of talent and haven't got anything like the best out of them. Anything like it. You know, and you can go back to John Keir. You can go back to Gentle. You can go back to Sharp. You can go back to Radford. Yeah, we won two Challenge Cups. But 2016, we should have won everything.
We were good enough
to win everything, and we didn't. Do you know, he didn't get the best out of that playing group. He did occasionally. And for 80 minutes now and again, we did get the best out of them, but not consistently. Not to a Saints standard, to a Wigan standard, to a Leeds standard back in the day. That's what we're striving for. And I think Hodgson has taken a job here where he's looked at Hull and gone, sleeping giants, I can do something with them. And I think as long as he's given time and support and the financial support, which we have shown him, we're on the right track. We are a better team now than we were this time last year. And we were a better team then than we were the year before. And it's not about where we finished in the league. It's about the way we play. It's about the personnel we've got. We've been bloody unlucky with injuries. We've been bloody unlucky with COVID and with everything else. But we're a better squad of players now and a better coaching partnership now than we ever have been, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I 100% could not agree more with that. And massive Hodgson fan, what he's trying to do and bring to this club right now. And all those parts that we see on the field every week, I mean, literally every week, win, lose or draw, the best parts of what Hodgson has introduced to this club. I mean, you look at McIntosh, the way he started this season, Adam Swift, that's a root and branch rehaul of our winging direction. We've gone from two massive 16-stone blokes to two absolute out-and-out speedsters. You can't get any more different than that. The way he's got our edge players, you know, the likes of Jordan Lane. This is a tricky one, right? Jordan Lane played in the back row on Saturday and was absolutely phenomenal. I think back to the Warrington game at home last year when he scored that amazing try where he ran like 60-70 metres, broke through the line. It was like Liam Farrell-esque. And you think he is the best line runner at the club by a mile, and he deserves a special mention for what he did on Saturday alone, because he was you know, very good, sublime. Is he actually a better back rower or is he a better loose man? What a conundrum to have there. And this is the thing with Hodgson, because when you look at some Hull FC players now, and you can say this for a few of them, they can play in at two or three different positions, and it's something he spoke of in his first press conference, actually. I remember it. And he wanted players to adapt to different situations, but also to be versatile as well, to thrive under adversity and to be thrown in, you know, different areas of the field, but still come up with the goods, and like say to play two or three different positions. And we've got arguably 7, 8 and 9 who can do that. Cam Scott can do that. Connor Wynn can do that. McIntosh can do that. You know, loads of players. Jordan Lane can do that in the forwards. Brad Fashers had you know, loose man. I know there's not much difference in prop loose man these days, but he still did it, and he did it well. He was very good on Saturday, was Fash. And then you've got people who have been criticised, people like Josh Bowden. Tell you what, if he keeps that up, then if he can get some luck and stay fit,
yeah,
that's the thing. Because he deserves some luck, doesn't he? He really does. He's had so many niggly, horrible injuries, and I just hope that he can have a run of games now and keep going like that. Because that was a very, very solid comeback. It really was. Jack Brown as well was phenomenal.
You've touched on something there, though, right? In that, you know, I've just gone on about new signings and about the evolution of the squad and about, you know, replacing, like you said, you know, replacing 16-stone wingers with speedsters and all the rest of it. The thing for me with Hodgson is the difference he's made in our existing squad.
Yeah.
Jake Connor, arguing, not happy, rumours that he wasn't happy because he wanted to play six, he wasn't happy playing centre, you know, blah, 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 blah. Hodgson's come in and looked at him and gone, what about if we played you at fullback? What about if we did this? What about if this gave you more time and you could chime into the thing where you was and you don't have to do half the amount of tackling that you do at 6 or 3 or 4. What about that? And Connor's gone, I'll give it a go. Massive difference. Huge difference. Cam Scott, what if we give you an extended run in the thing, in the first grade, and you play like this? Huge difference. Swift, third choice winger. You're my man. You're quick. I want you. Right? Satai, coming off the bench after 20 minutes, playing 20 minutes either side of halftime, going off for the last 20 minutes. No, no, no. You're my starting prop. You're my wrecking ball. We're going to build the pack around you. The difference he's made to the players he inherited from Radford, thank you, is completely black and white, mate. He's just improved the hell out of the players that we've got. And yeah, we've had some appalling results. And yeah, at the back end of last year, we were abject. But you've got to look at that in the face of what we're trying to do. The last 10 games of last year sealed Fanua and Shaw and Snead's fate. Absolutely. Because they were senior professionals and they did not stand up. And he's looked at them and gone, we can do without you. And he's affected that change. And then he's improved the players we've got. Mate, two from three at the start of this season and going away to Castleford who haven't won a game. We shouldn't be getting, you know, you don't book your Old Trafford tickets yet. But you look at it and you think, there's improvement there. There is absolute improvement there.
Absolutely.
The St Helens game's an aberration.
Yeah.
You know, everything went against us. It's an aberration. You put it to bed, you think, yeah, it's a shame, but it was a terrible game. We played the majority of it with 12 men. You know, it was in a bloody blizzard. Awful, awful, awful. But we never gave up. You take the positives from that. You take the positives out of the grinding win at Wakefield. You take the positives out of a cavalier win against Salford. And you go forward to Cass and forward to Leeds with confidence. And bloody hell, that's a good thing.
Exactly. It's evolution is the key word here, and backing Hodgson, what he's trying to do. We can all see that now as fans, that vision that he's got and what he's trying to turn Hull FC into. And I'm not just basing that on one win against Salford. I'm basing that on what I've seen for 15, 16 months now, ever since he's come in, and what he's trying to do and what he spoke of. I tell you what, he has made some big decisions. Him and obviously the club, staff members of the club behind the scenes. Made some huge calls. I imagine he will do again this winter as well. Because obviously there's still parts of that Hull FC squad where we think, right, actually we can utilise the cap a lot better here. And I imagine there'll be two or three big calls in this coming winter as well. So
yeah,
it is the best thing that has happened to Hull FC in a long time. He's someone who came in and didn't look at it with black and white rose tinting glasses and say, right, this isn't right. This isn't right. This needs to improve. This absolutely, unconditionally, it needs to improve. And he's done that and he's made those decisions. We were all guilty as fans under Radford and last, sort of looking at it with a little bit of loyalty, if you like, because he's won two Challenge Cups. He's given a lot of fans two of the best days of their lives.
Yep.
And it sort of gave him like a little bit, I won't say a free pass, but it was definitely going towards that. I mean, I was probably one of the West for that, to be honest. I, you know, really did appreciate what Lee Radford did at Hull FC and probably didn't realise how much actually that regime was starting to hold us back a little bit at the time. Looking back now, you think, oh yeah, I can see that. Yeah, this Radford out person, yeah, maybe he was right after all. But, you know, you look at what's coming now. It definitely needed that change. That change was undoubtedly needed. We actually made that change. We bought someone in fresh and he's completely revolutionised root and branch, everything to do with the club right now. Even the youth aspect of the club right now, you think...
Yeah.
He's making decisions for the long-term future as well, and the club are backing him 100% here. There's a massive, massive, massive emphasis on the academy right now, and look at what we've done, bringing Michael Shenton in, bringing Pete Radden in from Warrington. I understand we have just poached another hooker from Warrington, so that's a loose man in Nick Staveley. That's obviously their head of youth in Pete Radden, and now a very promising teenage hooker as well. So, yeah, I can imagine why you're probably pinning up voodoo dolls of Hull FC at the moment, because we seem to be poaching them left, right and centre.
To be honest, mate, the thing that's got me is the bravery. You know, it's not easy at all to walk into a team and go, we need to change things and we need to move on some absolute legends of this team. do you know? And it'd have been very easy for him to go, sorry, guys, these guys are under contract. I'm not going to move them on. I'm not going to move Fanua on. I'm not going to move Sneed on. But he's been brave, and he's asked the owner to put the money where the mouth is, and he's done it. I mean, wow. You can't, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, it's going to put some people's noses out of joint. And I think you said last week, you know, there is that element still of our fan base, which is very loyal to your Scott Taylors and very loyal to your Danny Houghtons.
Extend that to your Radford and your Last as well. There's fans out there who wanted to give Last loads of time, but are willing to throw Hodgson under the bus after one defeat.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and he's been brave, and bravery sometimes can be foolhardy and can put your supporter base offside and all the rest of it. But what he's done is he's absolutely, he's lived his decisions and he's owned his decisions, and he said, no, that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, the way we are at the moment, you look at it and you go, it's been brave, but it's been good.
Yeah,
you know, you can't ask for any more than what we're getting. We're getting much more application. We're getting a better defensive structure. When the ball in hand on a dry pitch in the middle of summer, on that evidence on Saturday, will be hard to stop. And when was the last time we could say that?
Well, exactly. Yeah, when's the last time you could say actually that looked really good, and we can actually go to a game looking forward to it, thinking we're going to be entertained. You know, forget the result. We're going to be entertained, win, lose or draw. We're going to actually enjoy it. It's a dry track. We're going to play expansive. We're going to play with width. Then actually look at the players and think, actually, yeah, we can do some damage here. And yeah, again, it's important to remember that this is Hull FC. It's one win. We've done this so many times over the past 3 years where we've had a performance. Even in the last couple of years of, you know, the Radford era, we had the Catalans away when we put 50 points past him in 2019. Yeah. We're thinking, Jesus Christ, how good the Hull look right now. But then we go lose at Rovers a week after. So it's important to obviously be measured and be controlled in our enthusiasm. But I tell you what, that was bloody good, mate. It really was. It was such a good display on Saturday, and just to enjoy it like we did. And that's what it's all about. You've just mentioned again, structure, shape, things like that. Being better organised, you know, looking like we actually have an idea about what we want to do and the direction we want to head in. I think we're ticking all those boxes right now. And for me, that's more important than actually league position. And that does sound a little bit mental, but we can't go along doing what we were doing in 2019 and 2020, picking up an odd win, but then being crap for 4 or 5 weeks. That's not going to go forward. We need continuity. We need direction to head in with our shape, with our structure, you know, with all those parts that are coming together right now. And that will serve us in better stead long term. And that's unfortunate what people don't get right now, that it is a system and it is a process, and these things do take time. It's not an overnight thing where you can just wave a wand and then let's see a St. Helens. No, it doesn't work like that. St. Helens had to go through some absolute shite to get where they are today. In the Kieran Cunningham era, they were absolutely dreadful. They were shocking. We went there and put 47 points past them in a cup game. We went there and beat them, you know, in league games as well. I mean, Langtree Park for, you know, 3 or 4 years was a venue we always won at. Now we can't buy a win. I think we're a dozen defeats in a row against St. Helens. It's a process. It really is. And we can't just expect everything right here, right now, and then spit our dummies out if it don't happen, you know, straight away. We've got to be patient. We've got to be persevere with all this shit. And if we get that, and if we do see some more solid performances with a plan, and we can look at that and say, yeah, this is going to work eventually, or this is working right now, and this part will come, this part's here, we will go in the right direction, which I think we definitely are doing under Hodgson and the players that he wants to bring into this club. And then we can look at it and think, okay, next year, a couple more additions, a couple more players that need to be gone to let go. We're thinking, right, okay, the top six isn't even a question now. It's about top four, top three. It's about having a real go. If we can do that this year and get a mid-table finish and sneak into the playoffs, and that's progress for those that insist on having those targets, end of season targets. And if we have a real goal next year, then that's evolution, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, to your point about doing it week in, week out as well, the acid test for us now is what happens at Castleford.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, even if it's not a win, as long as it's a similar performance, you know, as long as it's a 100% effort, you know, fantastic performance. But on the way that we looked on Saturday and the way Castleford looked against Rovers, holy hell, they look lost. you know, it's all set up. I mean, again, it's another one of those games. You know, we talked about players coming back to haunt us with Sneed and everything. But, you know, if Radford picked, depending on the team Radford picks, you've got an ex-Hull coach could pick Watts, Fanua, Westerman, Farimo and Turner against us, couldn't they?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of ex-Hull players in that team. And possibly our next halfback, if rumours can be believed, with Jake Truman. So there's a lot of headlines, you know, waiting to be written for next week. But you know, the headlines for us have got to be the 17 that played on the weekend, probably minus Cam Scott, who's going to be injured by the looks of it. You know, hopefully Tuivasa back, so that's a straight swap. You've got Kane Evans coming into the squad for the first time this year.
Sevelio's back from his ban too.
Sevelio's back from his ban. Wow, you know what a problem to have as a coach.
Isn't that nice? That's a good thing, isn't it? To actually go into a game thinking, where the hell is he going to play? Is he even going to play? You know, rather than being set in stone, saying, "Oh yeah, this is the squad." It's nice to actually have those conversations. Hodgson will be thinking, "Oh, for God's sake, I've got some tough decisions to make now." But he'll have a plan. He'll know what he wants to do, and this will be an interesting game going to Castleford, because we've just talked about one thing that really impressed us against Salford, and that was the width that Hull looked to play on.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Kirkham's a big pitch. Weldon Road is not a big pitch. We all know that. It's narrow, it's short. It's a different way of playing. You can't look to, you know, you're not going to stretch an opposition on a pitch like that as many times as you would do at the Kirkham.
No, you're not.
Yeah. Or MKM, whatever it's called now. So it'll be a different sort of game, I'm expecting. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, Lee Radford's going to be fired up for this one. I mean, he's going to want to get one overall, as is Andy Last, as is those five ex-Hull players you've mentioned. And they're going to be hurting Cass, you know, three defeats where they've looked absolutely rudderless at times and look like they've got players who aren't fit and are a bit overweight. And that reminds me of something that we saw at Hull last year, doesn't it? But the way that they've been playing, didn't we say last week that watching Cass at Wye was like watching Hull 2 years ago?
It really was. Do you know, and you've, I mean, I got into a little bit of a Twitter, not an argument, because I don't do that anymore, but certainly a conversation with someone who said, you know, he finds it quite, the guy I was talking to said he finds it really weird the way that Hull fans wish Radford ill.
Mm.
And my point was, I don't wish him ill, but I don't wish him well either. He's in opposition to us now. I don't want him to do well. I don't. I'm sorry, I really don't. One of the reasons I don't want him to do well, particularly next week, is because he's playing against us, eh? But I've always had that feeling when a player moves on from us, you know, they have the temerity to move on. I kind of go, you're dead to me. Do you know? Unless they're playing against Rovers, I'm not interested. And if they go to Rovers, they're really dead to me. You know? So, I mean, I've never wanted an ex-player to play well when he's left Hull, even when he's not playing against us. Never. That's just the way I am. I'm black and white through and through. And to focus on the negative aspects of when Radford was in charge, which was, you know, not a lot of flair, quite grindy, big backs, big booming props, not a lot of width, you know, and an over-reliance on Sneed in the last couple of years and his boot rather than any kind of attacking guile. You watch the first three games that Cass have played this year and boy, it brings back some memories. It really, really does. And there's a lot of effort there and there's a lot of big bodies in motion, but teams are just going around them like they used to go around us. Nobody's going through Cast this year. They're all going to go around them. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Weldon Road's a narrow pitch and everything. And at home, they'll be formidable. But on the road, on a wider pitch, they're going to really struggle because they've got no speed. They look very much like Hull 2018-2019. You know, and in fact, they've got a lot of the same players that we had 2018-2019. Exactly. So they really look like us. You know, so, you know, against Rovers, they never looked like winning that game. Never. And Rovers were terrible.
Must admit, I didn't watch it. I watched Thursday night's game. Leeds v Catalans. I saw the Friday night game was Rovers and just weren't interested in watching it, if I'm being honest. Then I just couldn't be asked. And that's a little bit of the way Superleague's going right now. I wouldn't say I'm disillusionised and, you know, done with the game and any comments like that that have been coming out, because I think that's embarrassing, to be honest. I mean, how can you be done with Rugby League? It's what we all love. You know, it'll frustrate me at times.
It's an early season crackdown by the referees. It happens every bloody year. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, oh, the game's dead. Bullshit. Yeah,
there's like a purge, isn't there? Something like the crackdown on at the start. And
it's already calmed down.
Yeah, well... Yeah, we say that. There was two yellows. I saw there was a... Well, I say I hadn't seen them, so I can't really comment here, but I saw there was two yellows for Cass players in the Rovers game. There was a couple again in the TV game night before, Catalans and Leeds, and obviously we know what happened the week before with what happened in our game, and there has been a lot of cards this year and a lot of crackdown, obviously, on head-high tackles, which is understandable. Obviously, it's not at 1989 anymore. It's a different game. Obviously, there's a balance, though, isn't there? I mean, we can't go one way or the other. There's obviously a duty of care, which we haven't had in the past. Obviously, player wealth there, which I do think is a myth sometimes, but it is there sometimes. And also, the RFL, they've also got ex-players looming over their head, threatening them with bloody lawsuits and suing them, and over, obviously, things that happen in later life. But then these are the same people that advocate. Yeah, they're the same people that advocate Biff and say bring back the Biff. No, you want to bring back the Biff, but you want to sue the RFL at the same time.
I know. Well, we were saying this before. You know, I think I still say the NRL are living in fear of class action, and that's why the whole crackdowns happened now, so they can point to it and go, "Well, yeah, that's what it used to be like, but look, we've changed." Do you know? And I honestly think that's true. I think there's a lot of worry in the game about stuff coming out of the woodwork. You know, there's a lot of players with dementia, there's a lot of players with you know, as a sport, for the amount of players that we've had with motor neuron disease, there has to be some sort of link. There has to be. And I think, you know, it's right that we're stopping the attacking the head and all the rest of it. But when, you know, like Farima, there was no way Farima could have pulled out of that tackle on against Rovers on Friday night. There was no way. You know, it's a split second thing. He was committed to the tackle, and you know, the other player was ducking into it. No way on God's green earth he could have pulled out of that. At the very worst, it was a penalty, and certainly not a sin binning. So, you know, I mean, just that is ridiculous. But I think, you know, in these days where people, you know, there's no such thing as personal responsibility anymore. Everything's someone's fault. Everything.
Victim culture.
You know, yeah, it really is, you know. And you can blame the likes of Hulkings and Rovers chairman, you know, where there's blame, there's a claim. You know, there's that kind of culture that pervades the world now. And I just think that, you know, it'll just take one player to make that stick. One ex-player to make that stick, and then we're in a world of hurt. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to mitigate it by saying, well, yeah, that's how the game used to be played. However, as soon as we found out that the traumatic brain thing and you know, was a thing, we've changed the game and we've changed it for the better. Therefore, you can't sue us after this point. And I think that's what it is. It's damage limitation at the moment. It's in the NRL and in the Super League. It's damage limitation. And the refs have been told to clamp down on it, and they always do. And 3 years ago, we had a conversation, and I wrote a blog for you saying the NRL's screwed because we've gone on these head-high tackle things and these players getting sent off, and they're blowing for penalties every 5 minutes. And it stopped it. And then 3-4 games into the season, it got relaxed again, and nothing was ever more said about it again. Like, there was that huge thing about offside and players getting sin bin for regular offsides, and then, you know, the six again rule, which is changing and evolving and all the rest of it. It's all about shifting the blame and shifting the possibility of litigation and legal threat down the line.
Yeah.
Is this. And once they've done it for a couple of weeks, they can point to it and go, yeah, but we did this.
Covering their own back, basically.
That's exactly it, mate. That's all it is. It's like when you go if you've got a job and they send you for a day's training, they don't want to make you a better person or a better worker. They don't want to give you new skills. They want to point to the piece of paper that you signed to say that you did it, so that if you chop your hand off at work, they go, well, we gave him the training, it's not our fault. That's what it's about.
That's what it's like, yeah, in a small scale.
It's shifting the blame, mate.
Yeah. So that's probably what the match review panel right now, obviously the guide from the RFL, you look at the well, the incidents with Luke Gayle, not the contact with Lomax, the picking up of Lomax after the incident.
Yes.
And Danny Levi did it at Huddersfield. And to be honest, I have a hard time in accepting that both of those incidents are worth two-game bans. Ironically, I haven't actually seen what Gayle, the pick-up there. I've just seen the incident, like, obviously, with Lomax, other than the charge down. But the Danny Levi one was going around social media. So we're getting banned for this. And then, obviously, people were defending it by saying, oh, what if it was a serious neck injury and he's picked him up? And what if someone did that to Mossy Masso at Wakefield, you know, a couple of years back?
True, yeah, true.
But it wasn't like that, though, was it? Nothing wrong with Mickey Lewis. Played on Friday night, didn't he? There's not wrong with him. Is that really worth two games? Is that really the way we're going right now? Or do you say to a player, you're not a doctor, just leaving the F alone? I can put it both ways, to be honest. And especially in Hull's point of view, when we've been whinging about discipline, because that was a big thing against St Helens, and that's something actually I should mention. Hull's discipline on Saturday was outstanding. They didn't actually do anything that you can say that was brain dead, that was stupid. You know, they actually remained relatively error-free again as well, which was good to see. So, you can go sort of both ways. You can think, you're a player, you're not a doctor, just leave him alone. But then if you're a player who's frustrated by the play acting that's coming to rugby league right now, you're thinking, get up, stop being a baby. Or you can look at it the other way and say, just leave him alone. You know, it's a tough one, but I do have a tough time in accepting that those incidences are worth two games. And that obviously meant Gayle got five. What did we say last week on the podcast? Obviously, we record this on a Monday morning before the news come out. We was expecting two or three minimum, weren't we? And when you think that incident, that's exactly right. It is two or three, isn't it? He got five, but there's two offences there. So the actual incident with Lomax was worth two or three games. I don't really have a problem with that. I can accept that one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we said, didn't we? Studs up, terrible look. It wasn't good anyway. You know, you can say Lomax kind of play-acted a little bit. And then for him to pick him up and start having a go at him for what he thought was play-acting as well, it's not a good look all the way around. And, you know, for Conor Wynne to get sin-binned when the match review committee have said he did absolutely nothing wrong and the blame was on the player that jumped and piled his... And then he didn't get cited for contrary behaviour, which is ridiculous. You know, all we want from anything like that is continuity, isn't it? And I'm afraid we didn't get continuity from that.
Common sense as well. That's something that we've seen now in the Wynne thing. They've obviously worded it saying that Conor Wynne, although he lifted the tackle, he had no contribution in Jack Welsby going down like a sack of spuds and milking it.
Yes.
And like you've just said, they've worded it as if he was cheating. So he should have been cited for that. Last week I said, why lift though in that situation? I still stand by that. I think as Hull players right now, especially with how players are these days, you know, feigning injury and going down that road, it's absolutely embarrassing. But if it's going to be there, then we've got to be smarter. I think, right, he's in a control situation, he's going absolutely nowhere. I'll either chop him, so get really low. I won't lift him, I'll just chop him so he goes straight down, or just leave him in the control state and get your line set. We've got players now are going to have to be thinking about that, thinking about players... Especially when they get reputation, thinking about, oh, this player, right, I can't really do anything here because he's gonna milk it. He's trying to go and milk a penalty and try to get me sent off or sin-binned. And the feigning of injury and the going down and the play acting in Super League and obviously coaches that have told players to stay down, you know, after they've been hit. Again, I'm going full on Arsenal Wenger here because I didn't watch the Rovers game, but I've heard that there's one where Rovers scored a try. I think it was the halfback Mickey Lewis. He ended up staying down again for a couple of minutes. Is he staying down because he's injured, or is he staying down because his coach has told him to stay down?
You have to get an 8-point try or whatever, potential 8-point try, or to get someone.
And that's not just a Rovers crusade. It's just an incident that I'm pointing right now. That is a game wide problem.
I 100% agree. 100% agree. And we should be better than that. You know, as a sport, we were always a sport played by men. You know, the old saying, wasn't it? You know, soccer is a 90-minute game where you pretend to, you know, you pretend to be hurt when you're not. And rugby league is an 80-minute game when you pretend not to be hurt when you are. You know, and we seem to be moving away from that a little bit, which is crap.
Yeah, it is. It's not a good look for the game, is it? It needs cutting out now. It really does. Where we go as well with the head-eye contacts is really important as well. There was an absolutely outstanding piece in the Old Daily Mail, which is a rarity to say itself these days. To be honest, that's a disservice to the sports coverage. The sports coverage is very good. The news coverage is horrendous. But the sports section is very good. And they've got some very good reporters there. And You know, there's a piece with Griffin, brilliant interview. If anyone hasn't read it, I'd say go on the website and read it, because it's a really good read. And it was about Josh Griffin talking about literally all this play acting, all the head-eye contacts, basically everything about that. And he was saying, a point he made, as a rugby league player, how you're supposed to adjust if a player slips and then you'll make contact with his head. If you're committed to a tackle, and this is something I mentioned 2 weeks ago, the James Bentley one. Yes, James Bentley went in like, you know, flew off the line like an aeroplane and really made contact. He wanted to put a shot on, he wanted to smash someone. But Gareth Widdop slipped. There was two different slips, actually, where he ended up changing direction. And then Bentley, it's rugby league, for God's sake, not tiddlywinks. How's he supposed to adjust? Yeah, he's going for a massive hit. Good. I want my whole FC props to do that. I want Chris Attai. I want him to go and absolutely cream someone. Same with Liggy Sal, Brad Fash, Kane Evans. Yeah. But how are you supposed to adjust as a defender if he slips and changes direction? Because of that, you can't just wave a wand and go, oh, sorry, there you go, I'll drop my arm or whatever. There was a big one. When the NRL was going tough out of it last year after Magic Weekend, there was a game, and this just shows there's no bias here, because it was my team, Penrith Panthers, and we played Sydney Roosters, and Nathan Cleary did exactly what I've just described there. He slipped into Sioa Takiaho, I think I've pronounced that right.
Yep.
He slipped straight into him, and he already committed to tackle, he couldn't change, and because Cleary slipped, he ended up catching around Cleary's head. He got 10 minutes for it.
Yep.
That's wrong.
Yep.
We need to clamp down on head-eye contacts, but we've got to be smart with it and use common sense. That's not a defender's fault if a player slips into him. And we've got a real danger now. We're going too far with it. I mean, Rasu and Lago got sent off for Bristol and got a 3-game ban for something that I'm thinking, that's just a good hit, isn't it? The original contact was chest and it ends up bouncing off and then it goes into his head. That's not head-high. The Jake Connor one at Wakefield, I'm absolutely convinced that the original contact was with his chest. How can that be a red card? Absolutely. It's rugby league, if you're going to say it. We all know the risks. Even if you play on a Saturday or a Sunday, amateur rugby league for West Hull or for Cot Tigers, Scarlet, Mighton, blah, blah, blah. You know the risks when you go in that field. You know you might cop a hit. It's rugby. I think we are going too far with it. I understand there's a duty of care, but we all know the risks when we enter that field, no matter if you're playing amateur, whether you're playing professionally, or if you're at the top of the game. We all know the risks.
No, 100%, mate, 100%. And you know, I've got a 15-year-old daughter that's announced to me that, you know, she wants to play rugby league, and we're signing her up tomorrow night to a local team.
Brilliant. Good luck.
This is the difference, right? And she probably gets this from me a little bit, but you know, we've said to her, well, you know, you can play Oztag, you know, which is, you know, the one where you put the little tag on the back of your shorts and everything, and it's, you know, it's like touch basically, because there's the touch tournaments over here are enormous. So locally here we get like a tournament here that gets thousands of kids from all over Australia playing, you know, and they all play in Port Macquarie. So we said, oh great, you want to play touch? And she's like, no, I want to play tackle. So literally my job tomorrow is to take her to this pre-season, because it's a winter game over here. So, you know, we take her to pre-season for sign up tomorrow. She gets her jersey, she gets her shorts and her socks. We've got to go find a pair of boots for her. And then my second job is to find her a scrum cap and a gum shield. You know, because she's a 15-year-old girl. And I don't want her getting bashed up and everything, but she's going to be playing with a scrum cap on whether she wants to or not. And she's, you know, after the amount of money I've spent getting braces on her teeth and everything when she was younger, there's no bloody way she's playing without a mouth guard, because that's my money down the drain, you know. Both me and her mum have kind of had a conversation about it, and we've said, you know, if it gets to the point where she does get hit around the head and she has headaches and stuff like that, we'll stop, because she's a 15-year-old girl. But while she's enjoying it and she's in a team environment and it's good for her and it increases her confidence and it makes her a better person and she's enjoying it and she's getting fit and everything, well then, yeah, absolutely she carries on doing it. I mean, she's nearly as tall as me. She's 15, she's nearly 6'4". You know, she's a big girl. But and quick as well, really, really quick. The only difference is that we went out to one of the local playing fields a couple of weeks ago, and I put a high bomb up, you know, my 48-year-old high bombs, it was high enough, and she squealed and ran in the opposite direction, so we need to work on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Scared of the ball, then.
Exactly. Small problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we're working on it. But the point is, the point I'm making, mate, is that, you know, she's going to play with every little bit of protection I can give her.
Yeah. No, I get it. And yeah, that's the way we've got to look at it, haven't we? We've got to be smart about it. We've got to, as I say, prepare with protection, but you've also got to accept the risks that comes with it. I mean, that's what happens when you play a contact sport. And it does make me laugh when we go to a foul rugby league as well, yet we all love boxing, where they literally objective of the game is to put your opponent on the bloody on their ass by smacking them in the head.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
It does make me laugh. Yeah, absolutely. There's a balance, and we've got to get that balance right with rugby league right now. It's a shame that after a really good start, you know, with your Channel 4 coverage and, you know, some of the St. Helens obviously, you know, taking the competition by storm again. Wigan looking very good as well. Warrington picking up some wins. You know, there's some stories in Super League right now. It's been a really good start, as I say, with some really good rugby league. And it's a shame that, especially last week, the disciplinary stuff, the red and yellow cards, and again on Thursday and Friday night, that's what people were talking about again. And these are people. It's a point. A friend of mine, really, really, really good bloke, Trevor Gibbons, he made to me saying these. He rang me last week and said, it's not just, you know, your fan that loves rugby league when all win but wants nothing to do with it when we start losing it. We're not talking about them people. We're talking about absolute dyads of the game who have been involved with rugby league and have supported rugby league for 50, 60 years now. And they're the ones that saying they're falling out of love with the game and they don't like this and they don't like that and they're becoming disillusioned with that. That concerns me a little bit. It really does, because if your dyads are thinking that, what does your casual fan think?
Yeah. I think look at what soccer's going through at the moment with VAR. You know, I haven't heard a single soccer supporter say that they're happy with VAR, but it's not going anywhere. You know, we've as a sport, we've been right at the cutting edge of change. Whether that was the first sport to really bring in tactical substitutions rather than substitutions just for injuries, with the first sport to introduce the stin bin, really, in contact sport. You know, the very birth of the game was a revolution in the way that, you know, we were getting paid for stuff and reducing the number of players, the six tackle rule that came in. We've always been at the cutting edge of change. And I am sure that in every one of those changes, you'd have had a grizzled old bloke with a flat cap and a pipe going, "Oh, no, this is completely different. Don't like this game anymore. It's too razzmatazz." There have been people when we went to... Well, there were people, I remember, when we went to summer rugby in 96. That's me finished. That's me finished with the game. I'm not going... You know, I love standing on the boulevard in the snow. Why, for Christ's sake, you lunatic? You know, there will always have been people that are disillusioned with the game. And it's generally, I'm sorry to say, it's generally the older mob, you know, because they've seen what it used to be like and they're not... This is going to sound really, really full on. They don't miss how the game used to be. They don't miss how their team used to be. They miss their youth. It's as simple as that. I do. I get misty-eyed about watching, you know, Luluai and Akoi and Kemble and O'Hara and Sterling and Muggleton and Topless and Crooks and Schofield. I get misty-eyed about that, but we didn't win every game we played. We didn't win the league with those players. We didn't win the cup with most of them. We never won at Wembley. We won a replay. We got beaten by the longest bloody odds ever against Featherstone in 83. And we won the title in 83, but we didn't win anything else after that, apart from a couple of Yorkshire Cups and a couple of John Player trophies. So all of those players and everything and how great it was and how we all look back at it with rose-coloured spectacles, we won sod all, really, compared to what we should have done with that time. I look back with rose-coloured spectacles with Brian Smith and everything we did and the improvement he brought to us as a squad and as a team and as the rest of it. But when I actually look at it, I don't yearn for the days when we played like that. I don't yearn for the players that played there. I yearn to be 18 again. I yearn to be 20 again. It's my youth that I'm looking for, not the players in the team that we used to have. And this is really deep for a rugby league podcast, I'm getting it, right? But honestly, that's what it is. And yeah, these people going, "Oh, it's not like it used to be, and I'm falling out of love with the game and everything." The point is the kids coming through are they falling in love with the game and it's replacing the people at the top end that are falling out of it?
You know, I've said that question,
that's
yes.
That's the point.
I see it.
That's
now.
The point.
I see this. I see this on a weekly basis. My 12-year-old lads at Cottingham Tigers, they were the community club for Hull FC this weekend. There was about, I think we had about 60 kids there, which was great to see. They all loved it.
Yeah.
Obviously, it goes hand in hand with the result and the performance, but they all loved it.
Yep.
I've got kids in that Cott Tigers team. Our hooker, Reese, our fullback, George, a couple of us, both our halfbacks called Jack. They're obsessed with rugby. They watch it on YouTube all day. Half term right now, it's all they did. All they did last week was watch rugby, play rugby, go to the park, kick a ball about. That's like the old school generation. They're not obsessed with Fortnite and PlayStations and Xboxes. All they want to do is play rugby. They're obsessed with Hull FC and they're 12 years old. We played Dockers. They're probably the same. I think they're half and half. They've got half the kids Hull, half the kids Rovers. But they're all obsessed with rugby league. Numbers in Hull, I can only use Hull as an example because I don't know Wigan, I don't know Leeds, I don't know, you know, deeper West Yorkshire, deeper Lancashire, blah, blah, blah. But in Hull, junior numbers, especially at primary rugby league, are increasing. More kids are getting involved with playing rugby league and falling in love with rugby league. The challenge is to keep them engaged when they go to 14, 15, 16, into the teens 100%. And early 20s. That's the market we've got to be targeting right now. Kids, we're ticking all those boxes. They are falling in love with rugby league. It's just ensuring that stays the case. If they don't make it professionally, you need to make sure they've got something to fall back on, whether it's still, you know, just watching Hull every week or watching Rovers every week, watching Wigan, Leeds, blah, blah, blah.
Or going and playing for Westall or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you see, I'm right in the middle of that, mate, right? Because, like I say, you know, I'm young enough and old enough to remember great teams of the past and the way the game used to be played. I played from 13 to 15, 16 until my guts went because I was playing against men, basically, and I went, I've sod this, I'm not doing this anymore. And looking at the way the game was played there and then, and, you know, it was nothing for a head-eye tackle and for an off-the-ball incident and all the rest of it. Even in under-13s, under-15s, you'd still get it. Now, I'm happier after everything that's happened with clampdowns for head-high tackles and all the rest of it and the way the game's played now and the professionalism in the junior ranks over here, I'm happier for my daughter and my son to play contact rugby league now than I would have been if I'd have had the kids 10 years ago. Because it's more professional now, and there's more duty of care now, and there's more knowledge in the coaching ranks of when someone gets hit around the head and they're not 100%, and then, you know, it's not, there's none of this shake it off, you'll be all right anymore, you know, and I really like that as a parent. And yeah, I yearn for the days when, you know, Kelvin Skerritt used to go flying in, fists flailing and head-eye tackles, and Adrian Morley was laying people out with the first tackle of the game and all the rest of it. You look back at it on YouTube and you go, bloody hell, it's a completely different game now, and it has to be a different game now. Because if it isn't, and it's that same old game that it was, kids coming through wouldn't come through because parents would go, you're not playing that.
Yeah.
You're not playing that game. I'm not having you have your teeth knocked out and your head knocked off. Go play soccer. Here's a cricket bat.
Yeah,
you know, they just wouldn't
that.
Do it, would they?
Yeah, I get that.
And it's a shame, and yeah, I get it, and it's not the same game, and I get it 100% that people are going, you know, the game's dead and it's different. It's not dead, and it's just evolved.
Rugby league is thriving. You know, it's so popular, just go, oh, the game's dead, rugby league, oh, it's got this problem. Of course, the sport's got problems. Every sport has problems. You just mentioned football. It's the most popular sport in the world by a bloody long, long way, and it's got huge issues with VAR and you know, lines at the draw with VAR and offsides and blah, blah, blah. Every sport has issues. Cricket has issues. Look at the English Cricket Board now and the scrutiny they've come under with what has happened with the Ashes and the focus on white ball cricket over red ball cricket. Every sport has problems. Yep. Tennis has had problems now with players shouting at umpires and screaming and smashing rackets into umpire stands. And every sport has issues. Not no sport is clean and perfect and all rosy in the garden. But rugby league right now, I would say, is... it's thriving in some areas, and that's probably a dangerous word to use, if you're honest, because look at COVID, look at reduced TV deal and all that, and it's so easy to be negative with it all. But how about we be positive for a change and say, look at what we've got. We've got Channel 4. We've got some absolutely outstanding athletes. We've got some outstanding rugby league teams. We've got some rugby league teams who are both outstanding, but they want to play the right way and they want to entertain us. And we've got deals with Premier Sports. We've got a very good Championship second-tier competition. We've had great stories in the Challenge Cup. I mean, look at Hunslet. Parkside pushing Sheffield all the way within 2 points of them with 4 minutes to go. We've got incredible stories all over the field. We've got a World Cup this year. Let's focus on that. Let's see how good that will be to see Tonga this year, to see Fiji, to see Australia, England, New Zealand, Scotland, Wales, France, Ireland, everything. How about just be positive and actually look at rugby league and say, actually, yeah, we've got a lot to shout about at the moment. Yeah, we've got problems with COVID. Yeah, we've got problems with this, this and that. We know that. We accept that. But let's do something about it. Let's all pull together and let's make rugby league great again. I think
and
we can do that.
My point is, 100%, mate, and my point is the reason that we can be positive is because of the changes that we've made.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree with that. Yeah, but I will concentrate that and say there is a balance that we have to definitely get right. And are we getting that right now with what we've seen with the red and yellows of Super League so far this season? Whether that will die down, or whether players will realise actually you can't just go out and knock someone's head off. Again, there's a balance there, isn't there? And that's something we've got to get right. And hopefully
it's
we will.
Happened 4 years.
Evolving.
It's happened for years. Do you know? At the start of the season, players being made an example of because they've gone in head high, or they've gone in studs up, or they've headbutted, or they've punched on, or they've pushed a referee, or whatever. You remember that a couple of years ago? You made any contact with a referee, it was an automatic ban. Remember that?
So again, ban, yeah.
Yeah, you remember people accidentally brushing against a referee, made contact with a referee, too much ban.
Didn't that happen to Brad Fash? Wasn't that? It was on the minutes,
yeah, and
wasn't it?
Yeah, he literally backed into him. He wasn't even looking at
yeah.
him.
Yeah. So luckily, the common sense prevailed, yeah.
It happened, and you know, the reason for that was we don't want to become like soccer. We don't want players surrounding a ref and pushing and shoving and jostling a ref like you do in soccer when which is just a bunch of overpaid, you know, prima donnas crowding around a referee to try and get him to change a decision, which is a disgraceful look.
Well, it's embarrassing,
and we've stopped that. We've stopped that in rugby league, and we've nicked it in the bud by, if you touch the referee, you get a two-match ban. You know, I mean, yeah, it was overkill, but it was overkill for a reason. And we've maintained the respect for the match officials by doing it.
Mm.
You know, now it's about you don't touch an injured player. You don't touch an injured player on the floor because, heaven forbid, he might have a neck injury. And yeah, I get what you're saying. That was definitely not a neck injury. But, you know, in the heat of the moment, you know, a player doesn't look down and go, oh, I think he's all right. No, he seems to be moving okay. Okay, I'll pick him up. They don't think that. They just pick him up. And if you can get that initial thought out of his head, I'm not allowed to touch an injured player, otherwise I'll get a three-match ban and I'll get sent off or whatever, that stops that. And it stops the sport being sued, stops the bad luck of a player being blah, 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 blah. Do you know? It's just, you know, you can look at it from, you know, the flower incident last year. When he, you know, he racially abused Savelio. At the end of the day, you've only really got he said for that. Savelio said he said this to me. Flower didn't say yes or no.
Club. Sorry, club on it.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Not Flower. I'm sorry. I was thinking of Flower.
Lance O'Hire.
Guy in the first. yeah. Sorry. Tony Club. Sorry. You know, Club never came out and said he did it or he didn't do it. You've only really got Savelio's word for it. Club gets a, what, 6-match ban, 8-match ban?
Yeah, something like that.
Do you know what I mean? But I tell you what, it's stopped anyone else doing it, hasn't it?
True. Yeah. True.
But, you know, say, it's
let's hope in 2 or 3 games time. We're saying that. We're saying that. Oh, yeah, it's cut it out. We're not seeing players touch an injured player.
Yeah,
we're not seeing
right.
players do that. If it works right now and cuts it out, then hopefully that'll be the end of it.
The proof of the pudding is in the eating of the pudding, do you know? And in 5-6 matches time, if we're still getting ridiculous yellows and ridiculous reds, and we're still getting 6-game bans and nothing has changed, well, then it hasn't worked.
Mm.
But if in 4 or 5 games time, if there's less head-high tackles, people aren't picking up injured players, blah, 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 well, then it's worked after a fashion, and then we just leave it. You know, and then the players know not to do it, and we move on. But it's not ruined the game. It's just changed it slightly.
Well, the game moves on, doesn't it? The game evolves through time, and it's definitely got better for it. Let's just hope what you say comes to fruition, and until 3 weeks' time, we're not even talking about instances like this.
fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Toes are crossed as well. Other news in rugby league this week, Jack Logan announced his retirement. Obviously, ex-Hull FC player, had some moments. You think the hat-trick in the derby, coming back last year and scoring again. Obviously, he's put family life first, and obviously nothing means more than family. So, you know, fair play, well done on the career and good luck.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, never let us down. You know, I'd be happy to have him as a squad player now. I don't think he ever let us down.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. You're right.
And, you know, like you said, last year when he came back in on loan and just absolutely hit the ground running for us, you know, just good on him. And any Hull player that scores a hat-trick against Rovers will have a place in our folklore forever. And what a hat-trick it was as well. That was an amazing performance, yeah. That one.
No one will ever forget it either, will they? That, like you say, that'll be in folklore. That'll be remembered forever.
Yeah. And, actually, while we're talking about it, Connor Wynn was fantastic that game as well.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he? Yeah, he played played at fullback, didn't he, for a bit.
And then went off and then came back on second half and scored another wonderful try.
What a day that was.
Kelly's try straight from the kickoff.
Yeah, that was brilliant. And wonderful. Again, what did we do on Easter Monday? We went to St Helens and got beat 62-16.
So exactly.
This is the thing, it sort of brings it all back round from what we started about with the podcast. You know, we can get carried away with what we saw against Salford on Saturday, but it's about backing it up and making sure that these performances are just, you know, here and there. It's about continuity, isn't it?
100%.
Rest of the Super League card this week. There was a lot of full houses in the Up the Cream Tipping League. Well, there was three.
Not
there's... me. Yeah, not me either. I went for Cass, didn't I?
Yeah, I did.
It's the only one I got wrong, though, luckily. Wigan 22, Huddersfield 12, Leeds 4, Catalans 10, St Helens 20, Wakefield 4. Rovers 26, Cast 10, Boo. Hull 48, Salford 16, Toulouse 18, Wire 32. I think 100% bankers were Wigan, Saints, Wire. All, I think it's 102, 103 tipsters. Every single one of them went for those three teams, big three over the Pennines.
Yeah. And look, to be honest, Warrington were run probably closer than they'd like by Toulouse as well.
True.
They're going to be hard on their own pitch, Toulouse. They really are.
I hope they get better.
But, you know... Yeah, me too. I'd like to think that the likes of Wakefield and Salford and Huddersfield will be looking over the shoulders, and Rovers, hopefully, but, you know, they'll probably get better. But you'd like to think they'd be looking over the shoulder at Toulouse, thinking, I hope they don't put a couple of games together because we'd be in trouble. Mm. But at the moment, you know, I think it's gone the way we thought it'd go.
Yeah,
while we're on results, final round of the NRL pre-season trials this week, threw up a couple of interesting results. Raiders beat Sea Eagles 18-16. Really good game, really hard fought game. Jack Whiten started the game terribly, made two defensive errors that let the Sea Eagles in, but then scored a try and set two others up for the Raiders, and then just had a real game of two halves for him. He was fantastic. Tigers beat the Roosters, believe it or not, and we looked quite handy. Jackson Hastings was brilliant for us.
Interesting.
Roosters looked average, and there's been a couple of things come out in disciplinary. There was a cannonball tackle that should have got a ban for Lindsay Collins of the Roosters, but he got away with a warning and a $750 fine, which is ridiculous because it could have crippled the poor bugger that he hit. The one that you won't be very happy with is the Eels beat the Panthers 36-0.
My dad's already said that's Parramatta stone set for the grand final, so yeah, he's in dreamland.
That was the worry for me with that is the Panthers didn't have a bad team out, but they didn't have Cleary playing for them.
Still had
Luai, still had Toto, still had Robert Jennings, Charlie Staines played fullback, Coruscant played, Kikau played. You know, they still had some pretty good players.
But then you can put five or six players in that'll walk straight back into the side for round one.
Oh, you probably, I reckon, eight or nine of the players that played would be in the first round for the Panthers, yet they were absolutely out-infused, outplayed, out-everything, and that was at home as well. So a real eye-opener there. Charity Shield, the Bunnies and the Dragons. Dragons beat the Bunnies.
Was that the first time the Twins came up against each other? Tom
yeah,
and George?
The first time that George and Tom Burgess played against each other, although they didn't touch each other. I watched the match. They didn't touch each other at all. When George came on, Tom went off. And when the 5 minutes they were on the pitch together, they were running in different channels and didn't actually come to touching at all. Yeah. One of the best tries I've ever seen from Cody Ramsey, the Dragons fullback, flew through the air and dotted the ball down, you know, very like our flying bin man of old, but an absolutely stunning try. And the Dragons deserved to win and were good for it. I watched the Cowboys and the Broncos straight after that as well. Broncos looked awful. They'd rested Adam Reynolds and rested Albert Kelly, and decided to go with a different halfback pairing of Tyson Gamble and Billy Walters. Gamble, I think he laid the first try on, but then did nothing else. Walters was completely anonymous the entire match. I think it's going to be a long year for the Broncos. I don't think the Cowboys will do much either, but when they hit their straps, they look very good. They swapped Valentine Holmes into the centre and put Hamisa Tabuai-Fodor to fullback, who was really quick, and it really worked for him. Holmes had a great game in the centres. Fodor had a great game at fullback. Their forwards looked great. Hess, Ruben Cotter at lock was really, really good. And this is without Jason Tamalolo as well, who they rested. So they looked pretty good for it. Storm absolutely smashed the Knights, which you'd expect. And then the Sharks beat the Bulldogs. And the Warriors game against the Titans was called off because the Gold Coast is under about 3 foot of water at the moment. We're all on flood watch here. It's not good at all. The Bulldog-Sharks game was interesting. Sharks had more or less the back line that you'd expect them to pick for the first game of the season. Dufty at fullback, you know, Brent Naden from Panthers, Josh Adokar played. The halves were Matt Burton and Jake Avarillo. You know, the forwards were, you know, Thompson, Vaughan, Hetherington, Tevita Pangai Jr., Josh Jackson. Basically the first 13 you'd expect them to play in the first round, and they looked awful. Clueless. No one was steering them around the pitch. They just looked like a team lost. And if that's the way they're going to play, I don't think their coach is going to be around for very long. And I did say that he'd be the first out, Trent Barrett, and I stick by that.
I think most people will. Be interesting to see how that all kicks off, the NRL competition. Obviously, it is the premier competition in the world of rugby league. As for Hull on Sunday, Castleford, I suppose we've just got to pick up where we left off on Saturday. It's going to be weird, isn't it? Up against Lee Radford and Andy Last and the five XO players that are likely line up against us. But it's a Sunday afternoon at Cass. The boat room will be up and opposite the ground. You can imagine that'll be packed to the rafters. There should be a good Hull following there, and hopefully one that'll enjoy it.
And the nice thing is as well, we're the last game of the weekend, aren't we?
Yeah.
So you look at it and you already know what's gone before you, and you know exactly what you've got to do. If I'm going to make a bold prediction, Hull by 10.
I like it. Any win will do, but it'd be nice to it'd be nice to win and win well and push away from the opposition if we do get on top. And yeah, I just want to see same again, innit? That old cliche, just same again. Oh, I just want to see obviously a bit more size. Evans comes in, Savelio comes in. So you got Jake Connor at fullback again. The halfbacks will be the same. Yeah. Obviously, the wingers will be the same. So, yeah, hopefully we can continue to play the same brand of rugby and hopefully tick more boxes in the Brett Hodgson revolution. And so far, I think we're definitely going in the right direction with that, and long may it continue.
Yep, long may it continue.
As always, mate, thanks for your time. I think it's the longest podcast we've ever done. But, yeah, we hope you've enjoyed it all, and we'll see you again next week.
You too, mate. Thanks.